And of course, Catherine Austin Fitz with us, her website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, Solari, SOLARI.com. We talk about your money, the fiscal cliff on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine, what is the individual, the person listening to the program right now, what are they supposed to do?
Well, you know, here's the important thing to understand. Everybody's situation is different. So there's a wide variety of actions you can take, but let me just run through some of them. The first thing is you really, as we learn about what the Congress and the administration decide through the end of the year and as they're making additional changes, as they probably will during the year, you really want to pay attention to your budget. So if you have a CPA or a tax preparer, you really want to understand with them what this could do to you. So, for example, we talked about the alternative minimum tax patch. You know, you don't want to be surprised at the last minute by these things, so you definitely want to do your budget and plan. That's number one. Number two, there are a couple things you can do. If capital gains do go up, you know, there are people who have gains now that they could take this year. Of course, the risk is you take them this year, and then, of course, they don't go up. So you have to be careful there. There's also, for people who have an IRA, you can convert to a Roth, mm-hmm. which means you basically pay your taxes now, but then you're tax deferred from here on out. And if the income rates are lower, it's to your advantage to do so. Problem is you can't touch the money for 5 years, so it'll work for some people, not for others. Some people, particularly in their own business, have the ability to shift some income into this year and out of next year. So if you have that, interestingly enough, over the long haul, George, I think what this is saying is it really pays to do it yourself.
That's right. Absolutely.
So why go to work, make money, get taxed, pay somebody else to do it? You know, take the time to learn how to do things yourself. And, you know, if you go and look at young people's curriculum, you know, one thing I always encourage young people to do is please take the time, you know, from before you graduate from high school or college, you know, learn basic plumbing, learn basic auto mechanic, you know, learn how to do for yourself as much as possible. And there's, I don't know if you've touched in on the maker movement, but the maker movement is sort of blossoming all over the world, and it's people who are learning how to make things for themselves. And as I said, with this new technology, I mean, now it's perfectly possible for you and me to go out and buy a 3D printer and just start to make stuff ourselves. The other thing is for people choosing between whether they want to live in a high-cost or low-cost area, this will change the relative attraction of living in those places. Now, it depends on where your income opportunities are in your business. But for those of us who can, you know, whose business can go anywhere, it's going to make the low-cost areas a lot more attractive. So there are things you can do. The other thing you can do is if you have the possibility to sort of organize and organize either with friends or family, particularly if it's neighbors where you are, there are tremendous things we can do. You know, I encourage people to do circles and get together in action clubs. There are tremendous things we can do to start to organize together. So, for example, you know, if you can get a bunch of neighbors together and one person each week can take turns to go down to the terminal market and buy wholesale, it's one of the most important things you need to deal with, sort of where the healthcare budget is going, George.
Yes.
Is to eat fresh food and stay healthy.
Right.
But that takes time and effort. And one of the things it requires is learning an awful lot about not just nutrition, but about all the suppressed healthcare knowledge and technology, a lot of which, again, you go on Coast to Coast. You know, so that takes time, and it's a lot more fun doing it with people. You know, most people don't like to do all these things alone, and it can really become sort of an adventure, and you do it with others. So I would say organize. The second thing is if you have an active business groups or municipality in your area, I think a lot of the smarter reengineering over time will come sort of bottom up, because if the federal government, if a state or local area could come in and say, look, you know, either we're not going to do it that way, or if you give us these waivers, we can, you know, we can employ a lot more people for a lot less. So I think as we all start to dig in, and there's something called the Comprehensive Financial Reports, annual financial reports, and I encourage anybody who's really interested particularly if they do organize with friends and family or close to the municipality, start digging into the numbers, because there's tremendous opportunity to re-engineer the federal budget by place, but I think there's going to have to be state and local political pressure to do it.
Now, does your gut tell you that they're going to work something out before the end of the year, or are we going to be in a disaster?
I think what they're going to do is the Republicans and Democrats are going to give a face save. So they'll raise taxes, but they'll define wealthy as, the president has it at a $250,000 level. The Republicans will get that number raised up, but it'll still look like Obama won on that point. And then the Democrats will agree to limit the outlays on Medicare and Social Security and other sort of spending. And then they'll agree to generic spending cuts, much of which will be determined later, and then agree to increase the debt limit, and the whole package will what I would call a modify kick the can. So I think they'll come up with a modify kick the can. The problem, George, is they're running out of time.
They are, because I was going to ask you, how does a company get its act together on the tax portion of all this if they take this right to the last day?
Well, here's the challenge, because, I'm an investment advisor, so day to day I sit with lots of different kinds of people talking about what this might do to them and their business, and it's unbelievably frustrating. If you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to manage something that's in the best interest of all concerned, whether it's your customers or your employees, this is maddening. It's just deeply, deeply frustrating. And, of course, the problem is to an entrepreneur, every penny is real. Whereas, we're looking at a system where they're not treating money with the same respect that a family enterprise would treat it. And I think it's that which has been just devastating to the, essential trust in the system. I remember when I went to be Assistant Secretary of Housing, one of my deputies came in to me, he's a very wealthy guy, and he said, this country, my grandparents came to this country with nothing, and I've been tremendously successful, and I have a great debt to this country, and I want to serve, and I want to give back. He was absolutely sincere. You don't hear that anymore. People don't feel that they are responsible to take care of the whole, and of course, that translates into the whole process of how we interact with the federal budget, and it's that commitment to the whole. We're going to need to have a political process that says everybody's responsible to make sure the whole works and the pie's getting bigger, 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 not scrambling to compete with each other over a shrinking pie, because the problem is not that, the problem is the pie shrinking and we're behaving in a way that shrinks the pie. And if we're going to change that, we all have to come clean and start making the pie bigger.
As a nation, so, Catherine, are we the laughing stock right now?
No.
We are not.
No, we are not the laughing stock. I assure you, anybody who spends this much on weapons cannot be a laughing stock. I mean, the reality, George, is, the U.S. dollar is where the U.S. dollar is in value because we control the satellites and the sea lanes and have an extraordinary military presence. So this is a very, very powerful nation. But the reality is it shifted to become a global empire, basically, grossly oversimplified, by stealing the retirement savings of the baby boomer generation, ditto in Europe, and now the politicians are trying to turn and face the baby boomers and said, well, we took your money to build global empire and it's no longer there. So
it's gone, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's gone.
And what do we do? How do we react when we finally find out officially?
Well, here's the
problem. Because you know it, I know it, and our listeners know it, but most of the people out there don't.
So we're all complicit. So, I used to have a wonderful pastor in Washington who would say, if we can face it, God can fix it. Here's what we have to face. We're all complicit in this thing. So let me go back to my red button story. I once asked a group of 100 people at a conference gathered to figure out how to help evolve our society spiritually, who would push the red button if it meant stopping all hard narcotics trafficking in their community tomorrow. And out of 100 people dedicated to evolving our society spiritually, only one would push the red button. So I said to them, why would you not push the red button? And they said, you know, we don't want, you know, because if you stop the doing it, the U.S. economy launders $500 billion to $1 trillion of all dirty money. And if you push the red button, suddenly that money stops pumping through the stock market and stops being used to finance the government deficit. So the reality is all this bad behavior and dependency on, you know, whether it's warfare or organized crime has been tolerated by all of us. We're all complicit. So let me give you an example. If you want to rebuild America, if we took 100%, even 50% of what we spent on the lottery and hard narcotics county by county and shifted it into rebuilding small business, bringing new technology in, rebuilding small farms, we could rebuild our economy in 5 to 10 years to something very, very healthy. Now, that's not the shadow government making us do it. That's us doing it. We're putting our money, you know, county by county, household by household, we're shifting our money into things that are bad behavior. If you look at the time, George, that we spend watching television, if we just took half the time we spent watching television and used that time to rebuild the economy locally, we've got plenty of time. So just with half of our own TV time and half of our own lottery, you know, expenditures and half of the money we spend on hard narcotics, there in it is enough time and money to rebuild the country. That's not the shadow government doing it. That's us doing it.
Do you ever see the day where cash will be gone and we go to a cashless society?
I pray not. I pray not. Because I think if you think, you know, in a digital age, George, data about money is worth more than money. And one of the ways we've seen the centralization of control, in the pie is shrinking because we're centralizing control and we're centralizing sort of economic intelligence. And a lot of that has happened as a result of digital technology. And you create a digital currency with no cash or coin. And, you know, that's the ultimate control. And I think it will be very bad for the economy.
Well, I think so, too. Now, what about the rest of the world? Europe, Greece, what's going to happen to them?
Well, Europe has the same problem. You know, Europe's been facing the fiscal cliff for the last year. So they just heard it, you know, hit it sooner. And so you have the same problem with you have the baby boomers maturing and the retirement provisions. They've been promised a great deal in the way of retirement provisions, and that money has been moved out and shifted elsewhere. So that's part of what, you know, I call the financial coup d'etat. And Europe is just managing its way through that process, and that's a very uncomfortable political problem because all the politicians are in the business of trying to tell people what they don't want to hear. So there's that. At the same time, you have tremendous growth around the world in the emerging markets, and part of what we're seeing is, yes, the middle class is shrinking here in North America and to a certain extent in Europe, but globally the middle class is rising. And you have a global rebalancing going on. So, for example, at the end of World War II, we had America had 6% of the people and 50% of the resources. We've been going through a rebalancing system or process ever since, where ultimately, as the middle class grows globally, we're going to rebalance to a much more even allocation between population and resources. So that's uncomfortable if you're in the baby boomer generation, but frankly, you know, it's more than comfortable if you're in the emerging markets because the opportunities are growing. And of course, it's coming with this tremendous centralization in the economy, and to a certain extent, that's shifting the pie upwards, but it's shrinking the pie from what it could be. But if you're in a place that is growing, you don't notice this as much as you do here.
Well, that's true, too. Are you bullish on the future? Or pessimistic?
I'm bullish on the future if we can find a way to bring transparency to really what's going on. Because I have to tell you, I find it very strange to live on a planet where you don't understand what the governance system is. Who's in control and why are they running things? And I think if anything dampens the economy from what I see, it's people not wanting to invest because they basically think, you know, they're looking at the governance of planet Earth and saying, you know, why are these guys spraying heavy metals on my head? I don't, you know, what are these UFOs running around? It's like there's a war going on, but it's all, you're not allowed to know what it is. So I think that, you know, many of us were willing to function in a world where we didn't, you know, we didn't ask and we said, okay, well, you know, we'll pretend that UFOs don't exist and we'll pretend they're not spraying. You know, but that's worn thin, and you're literally watching a global population saying, you know, this is no longer funny. We need to know. And I'm sort of from the Winston Churchill camp that says, tell the people. Because I go back to my metaphor of if you're going to fix the company, you know, if you're going to go in and fix the company, you need to know what
you,
is.
You need to know everything.
Knows. Yeah, you need to know everything. You know, it can't all be a secret, and it can't be all mystery, and people can't all talk in pretzel talk. I mean, you've walked into companies where everybody's scared and uptight, and they all talk in pretzel talk, and you know, there's not enough time in the world. You can't balance the books in a world where everybody's talking pretzel talk. So, you know, it's funny because I've run companies, George, and it's hard enough to get in a fully transparent, you know, company where everybody has access to the financial and everything's transparent. That's hard. Imagine running the CIA where 65,000 people are, you know, everything has to be a secret. Oh, my God. So I think we have reached the point where, you know, we have to, as I said, my theme for 2013 is coming clean. I think as a society we have to come clean, and as a people, you know, whether it's our households, our communities, or the whole country, we've got to come clean because we can't afford the lies. The lies are killing us.
But they may continue to lie, Catherine. You know the way
you know,
they are.
There's a whole, you know, and I used to work with some of them. I'm sure they're going to lie as long as they can. But the reality, George, is if everybody in America, you know, shunning is a very important and powerful tool. You know, we have the ability to bring transparency if everybody says, I'm just not going to play along with this anymore. I'm not going to be polite about it. I'm not going to show up at your parties. I'm not going to talk to you. You know, the time has come to, you know, we as a society have the power to force ourselves and each other and our institutions to come clean, but we're going to have to do it, you know, not by marching or not at the polls. We're going to have to do it in our families with the people we know, where we work. You know, this is going to have to happen in an extraordinarily intimate way.
And I think it's got to happen fast, too.
I agree. The faster we do it, the better off we're going to be. But we need transparency about what's really going on. And, you know, and my attitude is I don't care how bad the news is, you know, just tell us, because I'll tell you something, the most incredible, I've seen this, you know, I've seen it in government agencies, I've seen it in companies, I've seen it in neighborhoods. You can have a group of people who you think is lazy, sloppy, hopeless, unproductive, and suddenly you change the rules of the game to something where they feel like they're vested and they're a part of it, and no matter how horrible things are, bam, suddenly you got the most productive, hardworking, you know, suddenly they went from looking like they had an IQ of 4 to an IQ of, you know, 150 overnight, and suddenly everything's working. And I think, you know, as a country, I get back to the pie shrinking, I think there's no way to get to a productive place without people saying, okay, whatever it is, you know, it can't be worse than this. I want to know what's really going on.
Good point. Catherine, we're going to come back much more on Coast to Coast AM with Catherine Austin Fitz. Her website, solari.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Catherine Austin Fitz, our special guest, will take your phone calls with her when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, anybody, what's wrong? Ron Paul has gone silent lately. Where is he?
I don't know. It does seem as though he's gone silent. I just don't know, George. Are you current? I'm not.
Well, I can't find the guy.
Well, who knows what happened to make him play ball at the convention and during the campaign, but I think it must have been,
they got to him.
Yeah. Something, you know, whatever the pressure was, whatever the stress, I think it was enough to sort of say to him, you know, I've done what I can. He's 77. So I've done what I can, and now it's time to retire. My son's in the Senate. So I think he, you know, he probably feels as though he's made his contribution, and he's done what he can.
So, you know, this negotiating on the fiscal cliff between the White House and Congress, some members of Congress feel as if, you know, they're not getting a fair shake, that it's not going to happen the way they want. Is it going to be all compromise or what?
George, I just think they have very little time and they're dealing at a very high level and they're not dealing with a real problem. So, you know, they've got to come up with something to deal with the tax expiration that politically looks, you know, the Democrats look like they're having to take it out of the wealthy, and the Republicans need to look like they're cutting the deficit on spending. And in the meantime, they both need to not touch anything the shadow government wants or the, you know, the corporations want. So when you're having to squeeze blood out of a stone, you know, there's not much to do. And then on the spending cuts, I think they're just going to kick the can and arrange the debt limit. So if you're a congressman who wants to deal with the real problems, you know, you're kind of, and this, of course, gets, if you go back and you look at all the charts, what it shows is more and more of the economy is running through the federal government. So in fact, you've got a system that's far too centralized. That's why I come back to, if you could map out the sources and uses of money in the federal budget for your place, in Latin America, when they had the economy drop tremendously in the real crash in the about a decade ago, we had something called participatory budgeting come out, where literally neighbors got together and said, you know, that's it. We've had it with the government making the budgets. We're going to participate in figuring out the budgets ourselves.
That's true. Now, what's your take on Google and their $10 billion tax shelter in a Shell Bermuda company?
Well, I go back to corporate taxes, because if you look at what the corporate tax rate is versus what they're really paying, you know, there's a huge difference. So all throughout the federal budget, you see big defense and other government contractors are making a fortune coming out of the federal budget, but they're engineered offshore, and so they're not paying taxes on that money. So, you know, there's...
It's legal.
Yeah, it's all legal. And of course, it's gotten more and more and more. So we are literally seeing an engineering of the federal budget very much to advantage the corporation. So I think the big discussion that we haven't had is what is the proper amount for corporations to take out and put back into the federal budget versus individuals. And I think that's where this has been silent, because the politicians have no idea how, you know, there's no political mechanism to talk about that. They can't talk about that and get reelected, just like they can't talk about the black budget and get reelected.
So that's true. Let's take some calls here, Catherine. East of the Rockies, let's go to David. Welcome to the program. Hi, David.
Hello, George. You know, that's, you know, years ago when Eisenhower and Kennedy were given their warnings saying, you know, we got a real problem here. It's like saying we got a stove fire in the kitchen. And they kicked the can down the road, and they minimize all the true patriotic warnings about how to save the republic. And on the other end, in Barry Goldwater's book, No Apologies, he gives an exact scenario of what's happening. And then you have a David Rockefeller come out, and he says, yeah, if that's what I'm accused of, I admit it. But when you kick the can down the road, you minimize the good warnings, and you minimize the criminals that actually admit to the crimes that they're doing. And when you have a monetary system like this that donates so much money to the politics, and that's exactly how they say they're going to take down the country, you have a whole scenario of compartmentalization, that people have no say over these trans-eugenic projects or these trans-humanist projects. Everything's so put away that no one sees the whole picture, and these people are flourishing, and they're bringing down the whole country. And all the pain that these people cause to the Americans mm-hmm. and to other people in the world is just going to be in direct proportion to their criminality.
Well, he's got a point there, Catherine.
I absolutely agree. And I think the problem is for 70 years now, you know, ever since the end of World War II, the American people have said, well, you know, if you cut me in for my share, I'll pretend it's not going on. And the incredible thing is when you map out the covert part of the economy, George, what you see is you literally realize the financial system, much of it run through the federal budget and the federal credit, is really being used to harvest the planet. I mean, there's literally, you know, it's almost we're tithing into this black budget wherever it's going. And it's a testimony to what an incredibly wealthy world we are. You know, the planet burps out a new harvest every year that we can support this. But I think that's why I get back to the governance question, who's running things and why are they doing it? Because if you look at the fundamental economics down to a household or neighborhood level, you know, this is not sustainable. The drain has become unbearable, which is why we need to ask the question, well, exactly what is this financing? You see story after story of soccer moms getting together and trying to back hard narcotics out of the neighborhood, because ultimately the way you build an economy is, you know, in a civilization is one healthy child at a time. So if you can't back that kind of behavior out of a neighborhood, how are you going to bring up, you know, healthy children? How are you going to run a strong economy? And they literally can't get the drugs out of the neighborhood. You know, if they kick the drug dealers out, the next thing they know, they've got black budget helicopters coming down on their heads. So this keeps coming back to the fact that the planet's being harvested, and that is not only is that a financial drain, but then the lies we use to cover it up are a tremendously psychic, spiritual, and cultural drain. And that's why I keep coming back to this question of, you know, why in the world are we running things and where is all this money going? Because the hidden tax, whether it's coming out in the form of taxes or debasement of the currency, has reached a point where it is unbearable in a variety of different ways because we're shrinking the pie now. So the question before us is, how do we make the pie bigger? And you can't make the pie bigger unless you can find a way to realign the political interests. And how do you realign them if you don't know who and what they are? Because right now what's clear from, you know, the next kick of the can by the politicians in Washington, they don't feel empowered to have an honest conversation about all of this.
Do you think they will get this done before Christmas or before New Year's?
It depends on when they go out. I don't know when they're going out for the holidays, but I think if they play kick the can on the spending side, you know, with just sort of generic cuts, they should be able to fashion a quickie before the end of the year, but it means there's going to be more work to be done when they get back. They may not make it just for logistical reasons because it is getting close. But my guess is if we do go over the cliff, especially if they do bump into debt limit problems, there'll be a real tremendous pressure and they'll put something together quickly. So I don't think we're going to have any kind of disaster here, but I think everyone in America is going to be contemplating, you know, a significant hit to a budget, which they don't feel that they can afford. And that's going to cause us, I think, you know, as a nation to start taking this all much more seriously.
Well, the president's, you know, he's been reelected, so he's got four more years. But what about all these other people in the Senate and Congress? If they don't work out a plan, if they don't get this done, should they all be kicked out?
Well, here's the problem. It really comes down to your congressional district. But I will tell you, you know, my congresswoman, who I like very much, voted against the bailouts twice. You know, we have some very courageous congressmen and women, and I think it really, now I'm a great believer it always matters. I think it's a lot more important who your mayor and state legislator and who your congressman is than who the president is. So I think we all need to communicate. One of the things you'll find, George, is Congress is tremendously receptive to their mail and their calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so we absolutely can influence the situation by digging in, looking at the consolidated reports of how the money's working in our place, and making that known, especially if you have a great congressional person. I think there's some who are excellent. If you don't, you know, it's time to get somebody in there who really you can trust.
So what's going on with AIG these days? You've been following that story?
Yeah, the Treasury says they're going to sell the last itsy-bitsy piece of stock. What happened, if we go back to the bailouts in 2008, you had Secretary Paulson, then the Bush administration saying, okay, we're not going to bail out Lehman's. The bailouts have got to stop. Well, of course, the next thing that happened was AIG started to go down because they're all connected. And what the federal government realized, AIG, in my vote, was the firm most involved in sort of running aspects of the black budget. And the idea that AIG would go down on all those documents would end up somehow in the bankruptcy court or in too public a place, I just think suddenly they realized no. So we ended up with Treasury basically taking a huge position in AIG and being financially responsible, and they've been trying to divest ever since. So, and of course, we just saw a last chunk of AIG sold to the Chinese, so different parts have been pieced out. But that has been a very tricky and complex workout, and I'm sure the Treasury will be happy to see AIG finally go if they're successful in making that sale.
Next up, let's go to Pekin, Illinois. First-time caller, Justin, is with us. Hey, Justin, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good, Justin.
And it's great to be online with you and your guests there.
Okay.
You know, I had several thoughts at the beginning of this conversation, and then I heard the pie analogy of the pie and how they're going to divide it, et cetera, et cetera. My perception of everything is that the pie is already gone, that the pan's been licked. There is nothing left. And they're looking to who has the ingredients to make the next pie, you see, if this makes any sense at all. I think that they're looking to take from whoever has. And even if they have just a very little bit, they will take whatever they have to take in order to keep things going and keep the status quo flowing. I don't see any type of way out of this. I think it's a bunch of jargon. I think we're balancing on a very, very thin line. It's not a cliff. It's a very, very thin line. We're like on a tightrope.
Oh, we are on a tightrope, Catherine, aren't we?
Well, we've had what I call a financial coup d'etat, which is we've taken the real capital out and we've replaced it with debt and sort of phony baloney paper. But the reality is, George, when you take a U.S. economy, you run 50% of it approximately through the federal budget and you manage it on a negative return on investment basis, then there's never enough money. Now, if you were to re-engineer that to a positive return, you know, it's like a mutual fund that goes down every year and you have to keep subsidizing it. The reality is, you know, if you look at the planet produces huge, you know, gifts every year. They're called harvests, the agriculture. They're all sorts of resources. Now, have we run some of the resources down? Yes. But if you look at what is possible with simply, I'll give you an example. In the 90s, I took place-based databases, and I said, okay, what would happen if we just re-engineered the federal budget by county just to optimize the economy? What I discovered is there was an explosion of wealth that could happen if you were willing to manage things that way. That's number one, and that's before I knew about, you know, all sorts of breakthrough energy technology or what's possible with healthcare technology and rife technology and on and on and on. So if you just take suppressed knowledge and technology and optimize the federal budget for you know, sort of to decentralize in a wealth-building way, could we get out of this? Yes, we could get out of this. I just, you know, I've never seen anything to indicate to me that we have an economic problem. We have a political problem. Now, you know, it may turn out, because I still don't understand who's in control and why they're behaving this way, that there's no solution to that political problem. But whatever our problem is, it's not economic. Because if you, you know, if you run a place in a way that wrecks it, then of course it's going to get wrecked, but you can change your behavior. So I don't see that things are hopeless whatsoever, but we have a political problem that we have to face, and it's simply not an economic problem that I can tell from the evidence at hand.
What's going on in the world of credit card use and things like that, Catherine?
Well, we started to see consumer debt fall, and in the last month in October, it's up. So my guess is that, the economy is slowing and people are feeling it and needing to borrow more money. But we are, as the middle class is squeezed by this slow burn, we are watching debt at very, very uncomfortable levels. And the worst, George, is not even the consumer debt, it's the student loan debt. The thing that most concerns me about the future of this country is what we're doing to our young people. And that's why, you know, if you look at our local economies, one of the reasons they're hurting so much is we send our kids off to college, we load them up with debt, and then they go into the Army or they go to Wall Street, and they don't come back to Main Street and rebuild our businesses. So, and we've just seen the federal government say they're going to put in provisions that will allow them to collect the student debt by automatic deduction from people's paychecks. And when you combine that with the inability to file bankruptcy, I mean, it's really a futile system. So there's no doubt about it, we have too much debt. And of course, the possibility of increased taxes is just going to put more stress on families that have too much debt.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment. We're at the top of the hour, but we've got a final hour to go. Phone calls with Catherine Austin Fitz. And we're talking about the fiscal cliff. Her website, solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I. And I'm George Norrie, back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.